Welcome to the FMCG podcast. Make sure you're following us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us out. Enjoy the show. Hi, good morning. My name's Rich and we're Consumer Hub and this is the FMCG podcast. And on this podcast, we chat to some of the most interesting people we can find about their brands and their experience in marketing, innovation and sales. Today, we are talking with Emily from Lucky Saint. She's their head of brand. And we're going to be hearing all about the Lucky Saint story, what they're up to there in terms of redefining alcohol-free and get into some of the interesting insights that she's got into marketing. Emily, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Can you just give us a really quick intro into you, your role and the brand as well for anybody that maybe isn't familiar with who Lucky Saint are?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. So Lucky Saint, we are a dedicated alcohol-free brand. We currently have one product, which is our superior unfiltered lager. We talk a lot about, we want Lucky Saint to be to alcohol-free, what Guinness is to stout. So we're very focused on our sort of one product. In terms of my role, I'm head of brand. So I look after all things kind of brand and marketing, manage campaigns, our wider marketing calendar, and also have a team. Our events and partnerships manager reports to me, as well as our social media manager. Lots of fingers and lots of pies in the business, but it's a really exciting role to be in.
That sounds great. And just for anybody that's kind of interested in your career, Emily, and how you've got into drinks, a lot of people always are when they're listening to the show. Kind of, how did you end up at Lucky Saint? Had you got a background in drinks? Like, where did you sort of learn the craft of marketing originally and brand specifically?
Yeah, so I always sort of talk about in my 20s, it was tequila, and in my 30s, it's alcohol-free beer. So I used to work in PR. So I worked for a few PR agencies looking after kind of lifestyle clients, a few of which involved drinks. So things like Jose Cuervo Tequila, Boodles Gin, and also Street Feast food markets, things like Dinorama in Shoreditch, which has sadly since closed, but it was quite kind of big at the time. Then I went in-house at Street Feast as their head of PR. And then I made a bit of a move away from PR. I joined Fevertree, looking after partnerships and events. I was there for a couple of years and then got the job at Lucky Saint. So yeah, always worked in food and drink.
Nice. Okay. That's really interesting to hear the progression across. And you touched there on who Lucky Saint are. Making a big splash within that alcohol-free space. And it's really interesting kind of hearing you share that insight around, was it Guinness you kind of drawn as an example there? So that like, kind of immediately resonated with me because I like Guinness. And you sort of, that is just what you associate with stout, isn't it? But the story, so one of the things I just wanted to get into on that is the exact kind of like history of it. Am I right in thinking that the founder doesn't have a background in drinks? Is that correct?
No, he doesn't. So Luke, our founder, back in 2016, had cut down on his drinking. He's got 2 kids, and it just wasn't kind of serving him anymore. So he cut down on drinking, and the idea of alcohol-free beer was so appealing. It was, you know, having your favorite drink, but without the alcohol. But when he kind of looked around him, he didn't find a brand that resonated with him. He didn't find a product that tasted good enough. So he decided to create his own. So what followed was a couple of years of research and development until he finally found our brewery in Bavaria and created an unfiltered lager with them. And leaving unfiltered was sort of this eureka moment for him, where he realized that was sort of secret to a really full-bodied, flavorsome, alcohol-free beer. We launched in 2018, so we've been going for 4 years. I've been with the business nearly 3, so I joined quite near the beginning. It's been a wild ride since. We're now the number one dedicated alcohol-free brand of the UK. So it's been really exciting.
For any of those kind of watching or listening who haven't tried Lucky Saint, tastes great. But also, it's low calories as well, isn't it? Which is another nice benefit.
Yeah, so 53 calories in a bottle. I think, you know, when you compare it to an alcoholic beer, it's about a third of the calories. But interestingly, you know, we've spoken to a lot of our consumers over the last 3 years, and actually, kind of calorie content, weight loss isn't really the main driver for why they want to drink alcohol from beer. It's just having a kind of easy, healthy swap that they can do for a more sort of holistically healthy lifestyle. So people aren't as obsessed with the calorie content as you might think. I think they just love that it tastes great and they know that it's a really good swap for them.
Great. Use that. Yeah, just that leads me really nicely actually into the next question actually. So you mentioned there around taste, but what are some of the other key trends in the beer category now, and specifically alcohol free, Emily?
I think, to be honest, I was thinking about this question and I think alcohol free is the trend in beer at the moment. It's really taken off in the last few years, and I think, you know, for a lot of people, actually alcohol free is only now coming into their lives. And actually for me, having been with Lucky Saint for the last 3 years, it's been really amazing seeing the change in people's attitudes in that short amount of time. So I remember one of the first events that we did was a craft beer festival, and try sampling alcohol free beer at a craft beer festival where a lot of people are there to get drunk, and people were literally laughing in our face. And you know, fast forward, laughing at face when we were like, would you like to try some? And all the beer at the event was free, so there was, you know, that we weren't asking them to pay for it, it was just to try it, and they were so against it. And then fast forward 3 years, and the last summer that we did of events, people were actively coming over to us and saying, we're so glad you're here, we love Lucky Saint, we're so glad that there's a great alcohol-free option. We were pouring on draft at the event, and they were really pleased that they could be part of the experience without drinking. So just kind of it's genuinely sort of palpable, the difference in the last 3 years. So I think that, yeah, alcohol free kind of is the beer trend. In terms of trends in alcohol free, I think really kind of variety. So Club Soda, who's an organization that we work a lot with, who kind of champion alcohol free, have got a pop up in Covent Garden at the moment. And when you go in there, the range of alcohol free drinks is amazing. There are so many different alcohol free spirits, wines, just alternatives, in general, beers. And you kind of, it's like being in a sweet shop. It's amazing what variety there is now. Whereas I think when Luke started, you know, four years ago, that really wasn't there. And I think, you know, he tells this story about somebody who said to him that, you know, alcohol-free beer is not going to be a thing. You should focus on soft drinks. And thank God he didn't listen. But it's been a huge change, but in quite a short amount of time. But having said that, there's still such a long way to go.
Yeah, right. That's really interesting. Yeah, I've definitely noticed a much better presence in at the pubs near me, which are pretty traddy. I live in a small town in West Yorkshire, so it's not really a hotbed of kind of innovation. But even in our pubs, you kind of see a lot more alcohol-free stuff that's coming through. Shame it's just Beck's Blue. But when you go to the city centre, you do notice that kind of the good, decent alcohol-free beers around. Because I've only really started sort of drinking alcohol-free stuff probably the last 18 months to a year, so probably my journey in it overlays that story quite well. But sorry, I know this is a bit of a tangent, Emily, but just taking you back to the story of Lucky Saint. So one of the things I really love is the kind of the really clean, crisp branding and the logo. So it's a ladybird, isn't it? Like, what's the story behind the ladybird?
So a ladybird is a kind of international symbol of good luck. And Luke tells this story about how he had a party keg in his garden that had been delivered to him from our Bavarian brewery. And as he was kind of pumping out a pint to try the latest beer that they'd brewed, a ladybird landed on his shoulder. And that kind of became a symbol for us ever since. And actually the team still send each other pictures whenever a ladybird kind of lands. We had one recently, I think someone was on a train and it was the first time that they'd seen Lucky Saint on a being served on a train and a ladybird landed on them. So you know, who knows, believe in that kind of stuff, if you will. But it's just become this kind of symbol of good luck, and it sort of follows us about. And actually about 6 months ago we got emailed and a couple of sort of Lucky Saint superfans had actually got the ladybird tattooed on them. And we'd actually bought it with we always said, like, right at the beginning, like, how will we know that we've like started to really make it as a brand? We were like, you know, Harley Davidson, everyone's got a tattoo. So we want to get people getting tattoos of Lucky Saint ladybird, and then it actually, to our surprise, actually happened. So it's, yeah, that's where the ladybird comes from. It's a symbol of good luck.
Brilliant. No, I love that. I love that. It's very distinctive anyway. It's really different. Yeah. Not seen anyone with a tattoo of it yet, so I need to keep my eyes peeled next time in Leeds. See if you've got any super fans knocking around.
Yeah.
So just thinking about those kind of trends then in the category, like, how does alcohol-free differ from alcohol in terms of category activation, proposition, etc., you know, if there is a difference at all?
So I think the difference is becoming smaller. I think it's easy to make assumptions about alcohol-free drinking occasions. Like, you might assume that it's a Sunday afternoon, or it's in the middle of the week. But actually, from the conversations that we've had with consumers and the surveys that we've done, for example, Thursday night and Saturday night are two of our biggest occasions, which even to us was a surprise that already people are starting to drink alcohol-free on occasions where they would normally be drinking alcohol. And I think that, you know, when you look at summer, for example, people might assume that Lucky Saint Dry January is like our biggest month of the year. And it is from a marketing perspective, and it's a great opportunity for us to kind of own that moment. But when you look at summer, that's actually our biggest period. And it's because when people are drinking, people are also not drinking. And so I think from a kind of proposition perspective, now that the quality is there, now that the taste is there, now that we're available on draft, for example, it is a direct switch. And also people are coming into pubs, bars and restaurants. They've already made up their mind that they're not drinking that evening. So I think from a kind of similarities perspective, alcohol and alcohol-free are now following the same patterns. And it's a mistake to think of it as something kind of other that people just do on a Tuesday night at home. It's now kind of made its way into Thursday evenings. After work drinks was one of the biggest occasions that people picked out. So it's those classic boozy occasions are actually the ones that people are choosing to not drink. So that's been really interesting. And that kind of really informs the way that we look to activate. So we do a lot of sampling at point of purchase. Our sales team have been out and about delivering thousands of samplings in pubs, which, like I say, 3 years ago, was a real uphill battle trying to be in a pub, trying to get somebody to try alcohol-free beer. But now people are really, really open to it. So I think, you know, in terms of activation, it's the same as any drinks brand. It's sampling as much as possible, getting it in people's hands, you know, that classic marketing phrase of liquid on lips. So I think that, you know, we don't sort of just think of ourselves as an alcohol-free brand. We very much think of ourselves as a beer brand. And recently, we actually all did the first step in our Cicerone training. Cicerone's a bit like being a sommelier for wine. So now we're all certified beer servers because we really wanted to make sure that the team were experts in beer and not just experts in alcohol-free. So that's been really interesting over the last few years, how we kind of behave like a beer brand and the occasions are becoming more similar to drinking alcoholic beer.
Great. Right. That's really interesting, really insightful. Thank you. I mean, it sort of leads quite nice into my next question, actually. Like, what do sort of drinks brands need to be to be successful at the moment? Like, how are you going to get cut through? Because it's a tough market, isn't it? There's less spend available, isn't there, on those Thursdays and Saturdays? There's inflation, etc. So, you know, what do people need to do to kind of get that share of liquid on lips, as you were sort of talking about there?
I think for me, one thing that we can do as a brand and as a team is just that kind of devil in the detail. We talk about that a lot at Lucky Saint. And I think that when you're a really, really big brand, you probably aren't going to take that time to go to every single one of your draft accounts. For example, we've got a guy on our team called Charlie, who's our quality technician, and he goes around all of our draft accounts, making sure that they are pouring the beer properly, making sure that their lines are clean, making sure they know how to look after alcohol-free beer specifically. And you probably wouldn't find a massive brand doing that for their alcohol-free version. They might do it for their alcoholic version, but they probably wouldn't invest that time and effort into their alcohol-free because it's kind of it's part of their portfolio, whereas for us, it's our only focus. So I think for us, getting cut through is really going that extra mile. And another example of that was we activated at the Hackney half marathon last summer. And all of the other brands that were giving out drinks at the finish line hadn't chilled their drinks. And we had gone that extra mile to, I think it was something like X amount of tons of ice that we'd bought. And we'd got these trucks to make sure all of the beer was ice cold. And on the day, it was 28 degrees. People had just run a half marathon and they were sort of, you know, batting away the lukewarm water that was being given to them and reaching for a cold Lucky Saint and people, Amazing. You know, wanting to like dunk their heads in our ice buckets. And that just going that little bit further, that maybe as a bigger brand, maybe you have an agency who's looking after that side of things for you. But for us, going that extra mile, the devil in the detail, is how we have cut through. And I think the other thing for us is that we're very proud to be an alcohol-free lager. We're not apologetic about it. You know, we don't talk about compromise. We don't talk about, don't really talk about not having a hangover because it's fairly obvious that you're not going to have a hangover from an alcohol-free beer. So we really focus on the moment when you're drinking it. So what glass is your pint served in? What, you know, are the staff in the pub trained and know what they're talking about when you ask them questions about our beer? Having that really amazing experience in the moment. Whereas I think a lot of alcohol-free brands kind of talk more about the next day, where you're going to feel great the next day. You're not going to have a hangover the next day, and you're not compromising because you're not going to wake up with a banging headache. We actually don't talk about that at Lucky Saint, and I think that's made a big difference.
Right, that's really interesting. Yeah. And then I mean, kind of leads quite nice into the next question, but the experience that your consumers have. So previously, like you were saying, a few years ago, if you wanted a good alcohol-free drink, you know, beer particularly, it's difficult to get something that's quality. It's not just, you know, big brand bottle shoves at the back, maybe in a half-warm fridge. Like, what sort of feedback and stories have you had from your consumers, from your fans, around how you've improved their experiences of drinking out and about?
So, I mean, we get so much great feedback from our customers, and because we are still a small team, we genuinely read those reviews, and really great ones get read out in our Monday morning meeting. And it's still really meaningful to have that amazing feedback, whether that's via Trustpilot or people emailing in, or being at events and meeting people face to face and kind of seeing them have that experience of drinking our beer. I think that people really appreciate the like lengths we've gone to create a really great tasting beer. So because we're dedicated to alcohol free, we're not making an alcohol free version of something. So we're not trying to replicate an alcoholic beer as an alcohol free beer. We're creating the best alcohol free beer. And it's brewed in such a way that it's, people always ask us, oh, you know, will you ever release a full strength Lucky Saint? And our beer is brewed to full strength, and then the alcohol is removed using a process called vacuum distillation. But the point is, it's brewed to full strength, knowing that we're going to remove the alcohol. So it's all part of it. It's made to be alcohol free. And I think that people really appreciate that attention to detail, the fact that we only use natural ingredients, we don't use shortcuts. I think from start to finish, our brewing process is about 6 weeks. Some major breweries, their alcohol-free beer is made in as little as 3 days. So people appreciate the taste, but I think they also appreciate how much effort we put into the brand and the kind of lifestyle that we're creating around Lucky Saint, because people are genuinely proud to have us in their fridge, drink us in the pub. They don't feel like they've got to kind of order us under their breath at the bar, which I think some alcohol-free beers do. People do feel that way, or they kind of apologize, you know. It's that sort of like, oh, you know, sorry, we've only got Pepsi kind of thing. It's that we don't want to be that. We want people to be proud to order us and proud to tell their friends about us. And actually, from some of the research that we've done, recommended by a friend was one of the number one ways that people discovered us, which is a huge compliment. So I think just kind of putting that attention to detail, the fact that we launched on draft, the fact that we then put a lot of effort into the glassware, the staff training, the experience of it being poured, and, you know, talk about Guinness, we take a lot of our cues from that, you know, the theatre of it being poured on the bar. We have these really beautiful blue and gold fonts that we give to our pub accounts. So it's all part of the experience. You know, we talk about lockdown and the fact that it wasn't alcohol that people were craving. You know, we had plenty of alcohol at home. It was having a pint in the pub with your friends, and so making sure that we make that experience as good as having an alcoholic pint is really important. I think people really appreciate it.
Great. How have you successfully differentiated between the on-trade and the off-trade dynamic? Because we'll often sort of see smaller brands, you know, doubling down on just one of those channels and maybe struggling to make the transition. How have you sort of navigated that?
So I think COVID made a huge difference to how that all played out for us. So my first day at Lucky Saint was actually the day before lockdown. So I had one day in the office, and then suddenly we all went for drinks afterwards to kind of as a little welcome drink. And we all got a ping on our phone about lockdown was happening from the next day. So very, very early on, just as we were sort of hitting our strides, we'd launched on draft and it was going great guns, and then suddenly the on-trade all shut. So I think we had to really reconsider how you launch just a premium drinks brand. So traditionally, I think people launch premium drinks brands by seeding them in really great on-trade accounts, and then it kind of filters down and finally ends up in sort of major supermarkets. Whereas because it was COVID, all of the on-trade was shut. And we had to survive as a brand. So we pivoted, we did a lot of sales on D2C, we pushed hard in grocery, and we got some amazing listings with major grocers, which is a little bit backwards to how a premium brand might normally do that. And so we kind of then were in a position as COVID started to ease off where all channels suddenly were going great guns at the same time, which is obviously a great problem to have. But it just meant that we prioritize them all, which is the antithesis of the word prioritizing. But, you know, we had to really make an effort to understand what role each of those channels had in our consumers' lives, because, you know, you don't have online shoppers and grocery shoppers. Like, somebody might buy us online and then they might be in Sainsbury's and they might grab a bottle on their way through the beer section, you know, and then they might go to the pub and have a pint. So it was really important for us to not think about our customers as one type of customer or another type of customer, but rather how they sort of interacted with the brand across all of those channels. And I think it really comes down to three things, which is kind of taste perception. So alcohol-free beer, traditionally, people don't think it tastes good. So making sure that we really engage with the staff in, you know, whether that's bartenders or people who work in supermarkets, and we're doing really amazing trainings and providing really great sort of materials for them to learn about our beer. And that's the same across on and off trade. You know, availability, so making sure that we are available wherever people want us, in whatever format they want us, whether that's on in a pint, in a bottle, in a can, in a four pack. And again, that's the same across on and off trade. And then brand, so just making sure that wherever we are, we show up as the best possible brand, which is more difficult in the off trade because it's more expensive to activate there. But I think making sure that when we do something in the off trade, so we recently did some supermarket sampling, and we made a really big effort to make sure that our team was on the ground doing the sampling themselves so they could answer all the questions. They were, you know, resplendent in Lucky Saint uniform. They made the stand ourselves and made sure that it looked amazing. So I think those three rules of kind of, you know, really pushing quality and taste perceptions, availability, and then brands, it applies again across both on and off trade. And I think it's really important not to think about your consumer as like either an on-trade consumer or an off-trade consumer, because when you think about the way you behave as a consumer, you don't just drink one brand from a supermarket. You probably then go to the pub and have it there as well. So I think starting to think of it as a whole was really transformational for us.
Yeah. Right. No, that's really insightful. Yeah. Just kind of taking it further and thinking about kind of the proposition itself. It's a crowded market in startup land. You know, we review products all the time. It's a real kind of passion for us here at Consumer Hub. And brands that get momentum, you know, really stand out. And it's clear there's massive momentum behind Lucky Saint at the moment. You know, in a world where there's lots of brands trying to get a full range of 8 SKUs out straight away, you know, do you think more brands should take sort of more inspiration from the Lucky Saint approach of doubling down on one thing but doing it exceptionally well in terms of the execution? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
It really depends what you're trying to achieve, who your consumer is. I think for us, it made sense because we, like, lager is, I think, something like 85% of global beer sales. So it didn't make sense for us. If we want to be the biggest dedicated alcohol-free brand in the world, it doesn't make sense for us to start with really niche products like a, I don't know, chocolate stout or something like that. It makes sense for it to be a lager. And I think that, you know, when something's going really, really well, why deviate and kind of remove your focus away from that one product? We've got so much more we want to do with our lager. And I think it really is about focus. If we felt that there was, you know, a need for another product, we're not kind of just writing off the idea of having any other products ever. But I think that when you look at sort of the sales split between lager, ales, pale ales, IPAs, if you're a really big beer fan, I love beer and I drink all of those things, but a lot of people do just drink lager. So it's just about thinking about what's the best use of our team's resource, their time, whether innovation is a good use of budget for us. And I think that just over the last 3-4 years, maybe because of COVID, it hasn't been, and actually focusing on our one product, on our lager, has been the right thing to do. Another one of the things that we talk about internally is do the right thing well. And I think that's sort of why we focus on our lager. It's the right thing to do. Lager is most of global beer sales. Alcohol-free lager is notoriously difficult to get right, and we're very lucky that we have got it right, because you can't hide the flavor with tons of hops like you can in an ale. And I think that, yeah, do the right thing well. It's like, that is the right thing to do for a myriad of reasons, but do it well. So make sure that every execution of that lager is excellent, whether that's the way that we sample at an event or the way that we pour in a pub. So it's not necessarily that I would encourage other brands to only focus on one product, because I don't know, if you were making scented candles, for example, like, doesn't make sense to just have one. But I think the importance of having a hero product, at the very least, is really important. You know, look at someone like Manulife, you know, butter, like, their deep roast has sort of got a cult following. So I think that it really depends what the consumer is looking for. And to give an example of why focusing on one product for us works. So we had this really interesting insight that it was a chain of bottle shops, and Lucky Saint was their biggest selling SKU. And the reason was that people were kind of looking at the lots of different craft beers, and they were trying new ones and experimenting, but they were always picking up a Lucky Saint at the end of their shop to have in their fridge. So I think that level of focus for us has really paid off.
Yeah, right. No, that's really interesting. Cheeky question from me, but just to kind of offset that, any kind of interesting innovation pipelines, plans that you can share about the next kind of step of the Lucky Saint journey?
Not that I can share.
Yes.
It's a constant conversation. nothing in the immediate pipeline. It's a constant conversation for us. You know, we don't want to... I think one thing that's really important when you're in a startup is, like, sometimes you can get stuck on certain phrases. So for example, during COVID, we talked a lot about being an omnichannel business, and we were a third on trade, off trade, D2C. And for a really long time, that was great and felt really good to say. And every time that we did a webinar, we're a third, people were amazed that, you know, we were kind of selling the same across D2C, on trade and off trade. And we were putting the same amount of, like, budget and effort into all of those channels because they were all performing equally well. But actually, over time, and as COVID sort of started to fade, D2C got much smaller, on-trade got much bigger. And if we'd have stuck to that just because we kept saying it, it would have been a mistake. And I think that it's the same for having one product. You know, we do lots of talks, and we talk a lot about having one iconic product, and our lager will always be that iconic product. But we're not just going to stick to that because it sounds good. If it becomes the right thing to do. And, like, one thing that we talk a lot about is, you know, we are very specific. We say we want to be the world's biggest alcohol-free brand, not the world's biggest alcohol-free beer brand. So we're very open to experimenting outside of beer if that's the right thing to do, but we'll only do it if it's the right thing to do, and if we do it, we'll do it well. So nothing I can share now, because, to be honest, there's nothing specific in the pipeline, but it's an ongoing conversation in the team.
Yeah, right. That's really interesting. Yeah, it's a good kind of a 1, 2, 3 on how to keep your innovation fresh as well. Just keep talking about it, keep it front and center. Just kind of thinking about people's own career development, Emily, any advice you've got for people on what qualities or sort of skill sets people should really be cultivating if they want to be sort of becoming the type of person that seems to land a really interesting job somewhere, you know, like Lucky Saint, in brand marketing more widely?
So I think resilience is really important when you're working in startups, because it's not that kind of comfortable, cushy career progression where every year you get a review and you know, you get to progress. It's not quite like that. And things change all the time. I was having a conversation with one of my colleagues the other day where we were saying you get that same feeling of, like, when you start a new job. You kind of get that every 6 months at Lucky Saint, because when I started, it was 5 people. Now we're 50 people. When I started, we were a relatively small brand focused on the on-trade. Now we're, you know, one of the biggest alcohol-free beer brands, the biggest dedicated alcohol-free beer brand in the UK. We've just done a fundraise. We're about to open a pub. It's a completely different business to when I started 3 years ago. So I think having that resilience and not expecting it to just be more of the same, like, you have to keep up with the business and the pace that it's going at. You can't just sort of have the same skill set that you started with 3 years ago. So I think that's really important. And I get out there a lot. I like talk to lots of other people. I had breakfast the other day with another head of brand, and that was really useful to kind of share our learnings. And that's something I want to do more of this year. So definitely resilience. I think being a bit, what's the word? A bit bullshy, I guess, a bit putting yourself out there. You know, when I saw Lucky Saying, I thought that it was going to be really special. And I knew someone who knew Luke, the founder, and I just asked him to go for a coffee. Went for a coffee. They didn't have any jobs going. And then about 3 months later, I just emailed again saying, you know, it's really great to meet you. But any chance that you've got any roles going now? And he said, actually, we're just about to put a job up. We're looking for a senior marketing manager, which is the title that I started with. So I think we talk again a lot about creating your own luck. And Lucky Saying, luck is a bit of a theme. And I think that, you know, doing that completely changed my career. I wouldn't be here if I hadn't have like been brave and just emailed Luke and saw if he had half an hour to meet up for a coffee. So I already had my foot in the door when that job went up. So I think that, you know, resilience, being quite bullshy, going for it, and just not saying no to anything, you know, like, would you like to come and be on a podcast, or would you like to come and talk at an event? You know, those things are really, can be really scary at the time, but just sort of saying yes, as much as you can, and building your network. I was saying to one of my team the other day, you know, she's at manager level at the moment, and I was saying, make friends with all the people at your level now, because mentors are great, but actually all those managers are going to become directors, all those directors are going to become CMOs, and suddenly you'll have this network of people. So I think, yeah, be a bit bullshy, be resilient, but also keep learning. Like, you can't stop learning if you want to stay with the business. I feel like you have to kind of keep reinventing yourself as the business grows, because suddenly if the business goes well, 3 years on, you find yourself as, you know, head of brand of this big beer brand, and it can be really scary. I sit in our Monday morning meetings sometimes and have intense imposter syndrome, because the things that are going on across the team are so amazing, and like the wins that we're getting are amazing, and you sort of stand there thinking, oh, at what point are they going to like figure me out? But you've got to keep, you know, developing and learning and bringing value to the business. You have to keep bringing value, and you can't just sort of rely on the experience that you had. You've got to actively learn.
Right, no, that is some really good advice. As a recruitment consultant 10 years in, yeah, that point there around networking and being a bit bullshit, 100% agree. I mean, you always see the best jobs going to people that really back themselves. And it's not about being cocky, is it? It's just about knowing your value, isn't it? And being really clear with that. So I love that. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute privilege. It's been really, really insightful. I've learned those, and hopefully everybody watching and listening has as well. If you enjoy the podcast, please do reach out to Emily. Drop her a note. You're on LinkedIn, I'm guessing, are you, Emily? Or yeah, and say thank you for your time, because anyone can invest in the podcast as they're doing it to give back to the industry. We really appreciate it, so I hope you do too. And please, more importantly, go and try Lucky Saying if you haven't done already. Go and follow them on socials. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you soon. Take care.